Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
Six on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show coming up at about 1:35. Our good buddy Peter Brooks joining us from the Heritage Foundation. All things Russia. I don't know if you saw the story over the weekend, but there are reports now, and we've been talking about this for a long time, but the Russians and Vladimir Putin, of course, going after our power grid. So we'll talk about that and the fact that the president has now expelled some 60 Russian diplomats from here in America. So we'll talk about that, some of the new sanctions against Russia as well. All of that with Peter Brooks, straight ahead at 1:35 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Now, right now, all across the interwebs and Twitter sphere, there is a picture of David Hogg. Yes, I'm talking about the March for Lives. David Hogg, there is a photograph of him with Valerie Jarrett, senior advisor to President Obama. Listen, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking of all the stories that I want to cover today. And the March for Our Lives marches all across America over the weekend. I don't know what else there is to say about these things. I mean, I've been covering this for weeks now, and there's nothing that has changed since the last upteen times that I've spoken about the agenda and the arrogance and the ignorance of a lot of these and most of these students. So I believe some of them are well-meaning, but I think a lot of them, they have absolutely no idea that they're being used as political pawns. Now, we all know about the interview, and I had put the video on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page. You remember the interview. It was of David Hogg, and, you know, this guy, they keep referring to him as a quote-unquote Parkland survivor, and he really is the voice, and he really is the face of this movement. And so when you talk about David Hogg, and when you talk about the agenda, the arrogance, and a lot of the various things that he's saying about politicians and about gun owners and the Second Amendment and the Constitution, he really just sounds so angry. And so one of the things that I posted on Facebook, and maybe you remember the interview, maybe you don't, but YouTube has now pulled down this interview. And this interview was of David Hogg. And it was like he was sitting in somebody's living room, and it was just F-bomb after F-bomb after F-bomb and S-bomb and S-bomb. And there is such anger and such arrogance and such hostility. And I do understand. I do understand the reasons why he purports to be angry. But I wonder at this point, if David Hogg really is angry, or is he just realizing that, you know, the more angry that I sound, David Hogg would say, the more attention he's getting. See, I think part of what Hogg and this other woman, Emma Gonzalez, girl, teenager, I think that really what they're getting out of this is they are feeding their own petulance. They're feeding their own narcissism, their own teenage narcissism. Because if it really was about keeping students safe, then it wouldn't be just about the gun. It would be about all of the issues. But nobody wants to talk about all of the issues. They want to focus in on the Second Amendment. But you know, for me, and you know, I realize that people come and go on the radio program, and so I don't necessarily always like to mention some of the various points that I've been making over and over again about these students and about the left and about what they are doing right now with these marches and these student walkouts all across America. But what the left is doing and what the media is doing, what David Hogg is doing, what Emma Gonzalez is doing, what Hollywood is doing, is they're creating an entirely new voting base, an entirely new block of Democrats. Because what they're doing is they are essentially equating guns with conservatives and Republicans. That's what they're doing. And the more that they can tie, the more that the left can use, and we can talk about the activist groups all day long, and you know that I have. But when you talk about the fact that you have a lot of these groups and their ultimate goal isn't to keep kids safe. You know better than that, and I know better than that. But what they're really doing is they're creating a common enemy. You know, amongst teenagers, and you remember this when you were in high school, right? Amongst teenagers, there's always these different cliques. You've got the jocks. You've got the heavy metalers or the ones that listen to Marilyn Manson. What are they, goths? You got all these. You got the kids in drama, right? You've got all the various cliques in high school. What is the one way that you can unite all of these various cliques? It's by creating a common enemy. That common enemy, friends, is the gun. And then when you broaden that out, what equates with the gun? That would be conservatives and Republicans. Therefore, Republicans are bad, conservatives are bad, guns are bad. Forget about the fact that it is the left and it is that kind of an agenda. The left, the gun-grabbing agenda. That really did put these students at Parkland and elsewhere in a space and in a place that was certainly not a safe space in any way, shape, or form, because a lot of these schools are no gun zones or gun-free zones. Leaving the students and leaving the teachers and leaving the parents who were there and anybody else within that safe space, so-called, unsafe. Because gunmen are not going to pay attention to the rules, and we know that. And we've been saying that ad nauseum. And you know where I stand on the whole arming teachers with guns. I think that's a great idea. I really do. Whether or not that's going to happen, I don't know. So this weekend, it was all about the March for Our Lives crowd. And one of the things, there's a lot of various aspects and angles to this story. And one of them, I thought it was really interesting because I was watching some of the video. And a lot of these students had a little price tag. It was $1.05. And so the question would be, why is it that a lot of these protesters are wearing price tags? And why are they so inexpensive? Well, the tags, which again have $1.05 printed on them, as the Daily Mail reports, they say this has a sad but purposeful meaning. They say that each Florida student's worth is $1.05 based on the amount of money Marco Rubio has received from the NRA. Now, one of the other things that I find fascinating about this whole thing, and by the way, and I know that I'm preaching to the choir here, so I'm not going to spend an inordinate amount of time on this, but, you know, if there is a proud Second Amendment loving NRA member there at Parkland or whatever other school ends up getting shot up in the next couple of months or in the past, if there's an NRA member there that can take out said gunman walking into this gun-free zone, well, then guess what? A lot of students are going to be saved, and we know that. But again, I'm preaching to the choir, and we all know this. But one of the things that you have to think about, because they're coming after Marco Rubio, and you know what? I want you to think about this, because one of the things that I mentioned when we were talking about that David Hogg video, that it really did go viral before YouTube pulled it down. I would also be interested to know, why is it that YouTube pulled down that video that portrayed David Hogg as such an angry, arrogant, and frankly, factually wrong spokesperson for the left? I think the reason why YouTube pulled it down is because it portrayed Hogg in such a negative way. And people certainly noticed that. And so YouTube did decide to pull it down. I would be willing to bet they pulled it down because those on the left, the people that are pulling the strings of David Hogg, realized that he was going way too rogue. And one of the things that I said during the time when I had this up on the Facebook page, again, before it was pulled, is that his complete and utter arrogance and anger and the focus on the gun, of course, was doing a number of various different things. And one of the things that it was doing was it was misdirecting from some of the other issues that need to be discussed, like mental health and again, gun-free zones and all the other things that we talk about weekly here on WTN. So, of course, now on the interwebs, there is a photograph of David Hogg with Valerie Jarrett, senior advisor to President Obama. So what does that tell you? It tells you that, yes, this whole thing is far from grassroots. the walkouts, the March for Our Lives, and all the other. Did you hear what's happening in Wisconsin? Got a bunch of students in Wisconsin who are apparently marching to the home of Paul Ryan, as a matter of fact. You know, I've joked in the past about how Paul Ryan is somebody who, and a lot of these politicians, they live with walls around their home. He's probably kind of glad he's got those walls up there today, because you have got all these hundreds or thousands of students that are surrounding his home, talking about gun control and talking about the Second Amendment. And we know that David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez and all these other folks, we know what this is all about, because I've been explaining it to you for quite some time now. So to me, the fact that there's a smiling David Hogg and a smiling Valerie Jarrett right there online for the world to see, again, it is very simply proof of what we've been saying all along. People are criticizing Rick Santorum, by the way, because one of the things that Santorum said is that teenagers should learn CPR instead of protesting over guns. Now, as you can imagine, this made some heads explode on the left. I understand what Santorum is saying, but he is now getting absolutely eviscerated on social media. He's getting absolutely eviscerated by Emma Gonzalez and David Hogg and a whole bunch of folks on the left. But let's hear some of this audio from this weekend's March for Our Lives. This is Emma Gonzalez.
Since the time that I came out here, it has been 6 minutes and 20 seconds. The shooter has ceased shooting and will soon abandon his rifle, blend in with the students as they escape and walk free for an hour before arrest. Fight for your lives before it's someone else's job.
So, just so easy. So, according to Emma Gonzalez, she is saying that the people there at this March for Our Lives, they need to fight for their lives. Okay. Well, how are you going to fight for your life if you're unarmed? That goes right back to what I said earlier today. How nice would it have been if there was somebody who was an NRA member, Second Amendment loving person who had their own firearm to defend themselves and fight for themselves and for the lives of others? But again, this is the what I would say is a lack of perspective that a lot of these students have, because they are being used as pawns by a lot of these activist groups who are, I would say, are literally being given scripts. Emma Gonzalez, David Hogg, and some of these other folks, some of these other kids, they are being given scripts.
6 minutes and 20 seconds with an AR-15, and my friend Carmen would never complain to me about piano practice.
Yeah, and one of the problems that a lot of folks have, and I have it too, is that if you're going to criticize the likes of Emma Gonzalez and David Hogg, then automatically you, as in me, were part of the problem. We must be under the thumb, the financial thumb of the NRA. I've received those complaints before. It is what it is. David Hogg, of course, blaming the NRA for the shooting, and also blames politicians who refuse to impugn our rights. Listen.
When politicians send their thoughts and prayers with no action, we say no more. And to those politicians supported by the NRA that allow the continued slaughter of our children and our future, I say get your resumes ready.
Yeah, and also don't forget that one of the perpetual themes across the country was go out and get registered to vote. And that brings me right back to what I was saying earlier today, which is the fact that the left is using this to try and cultivate an entire new generation of voters for their party, for the Democrats. That is what this is all about. And if you don't think that's true, go back and listen to and read some of the speeches that were given across the country, including, by the way, here in Nashville, when they did make a point to say that what needs to happen is kids, high school kids going into college and so forth, they need to vote. By the way, the big question is, and they need to register to vote. How many people actually showed up for the March for Our Lives crowd? Because, and we know this, we've seen this all over again. Good Lord, it happened during the inauguration of President Trump. If you're against the whole March for Our Lives movement, well, then you're going to say the crowd was smaller than expected. If you're for it, well, then the crowd was huge, phenomenal. How is it possible, though, that you can have a crowd size of somewhere between 200,000 and 800,000? Good Lord, I don't know how that's possible. Bottom line is this. You have to listen to the words. Forget about the numbers. You've got, because it's not about the numbers. It's about the message. And what is the message that those kids are bringing forth? And who is behind the message? And what is the agenda of those people who are, again, pulling the strings of all of these kids? 615-737-9986. Matthew is in the borough and is on WTN. Go ahead.
Hey, Dan. You know, you and Michael have been on this for weeks, and there was a great write-up in the Federalist a couple of weeks ago about the organization, the aspect of this. And my question is, what then do those who support freedom do to counter-organize? Because in politics, the momentum or the victories are given to those with the momentum and the power behind them. So what should conservatives do when organizing against these kinds of moves?
Well, I think part of the problem that conservatives have, and I've always said this, and it irritates the you-know-what out of me, because conservatives, I think it's because either we're working too much or whatever it is, but conservatives, one, is we're just not as good at organizing. And Matthew, you bring up a great point. Conservatives aren't as good at organizing as, frankly, we need to be. But also, one of the problems that conservatives have always had, and it regardless of whatever issue we're talking about, is conservatives have always been weak in defending themselves or ourselves. How many times have we been called racist? How many times have we been called sexist? How many times have we been called any name under the book? And oftentimes it just seems like conservatives, they make decisions based on fear of being called those names, as opposed to defending ourselves, as opposed to fighting back. You know, when somebody like Maxine Waters or Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer, a lot of these folks on the left, whenever a piece of legislation comes up, whether it's repealing and replacing Obamacare, budgets, whatever, it always seems to come back, immigration, it always comes back to the same points from the left. And that is that conservatives are called some sort of an ist, racist, sexist, misogynist, you name it. And instead of defending ourselves, and let me tell you something, y'all know because you listen to me hopefully every day, but who knows. But let's face it, we as conservatives here on WTN and some of the more proud conservatives, yes, indeed, we do defend ourselves. But as a party, I don't think we defend ourselves nearly enough. And Matthew, I would agree with you that we do need to get far better at organizing. 124 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Coming up at 135, all the latest on Russia with Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation. That's straight ahead on WTN. 134, Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Manda Show. 615-737-9986, 615-737-WWTN. Well, we've got some big news. President Trump has now ordered the expulsion of 60 Russians from the United States. And I want to welcome on in Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation. There's a couple of different stories that I want to talk about regarding the Russians, but this is, of course, at top of the news today. Peter, always appreciate having you here on Monday. So, big surprise to you that the president decided to expel these 60 Russians?
Well, it wasn't just the United States, Dan. I mean, it was. I'm hearing 14 other nations.
Oh yeah,
have done the same, similar.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is. I imagine they probably waited until they were sure. You know, the Americans were sure that this was the case. That the Russians were behind this poisoning of Sergei Skripal and his daughter. I think probably they decided to wait to make sure they were comfortable, even though they had spoken with the British, and to go ahead and do it. And obviously seemed to be quite a coordinated, internationally coordinated event that these diplomats, some of them intelligence officers, no doubt, have been expelled from the United States and a number of other countries.
I guess what's interesting here, Peter, is that it's not like this. Well, I'll ask you the question because maybe
okay.
I'm uninformed, but I mean, this is the poisoning of this former Russian spy and his daughter. I mean, Putin's been doing this kind of thing for a long time. So what made this one so got everybody up so up in arms?
Well, I mean, obviously, it has happened before. I think the most recent was 2006. That was a long time ago. That was Litvinenko. That was also in Britain, unless I'm missing something. But I think it was the chemical weapon that was used this time, a Russian chemical weapon called Novichok, which means in Russian means the new thing. And this is considered to be perhaps the most toxic chemical weapon, a nerve agent out there. So its use they consider to be egregious, and it could have affected other people. You know, others were warned. It was done in a public place. Relations with Russia aren't very good right now, across the board in terms of Europe, in terms of the United States. So this was sending a very strong signal. Also, think about it. Just a week or two ago, was it, Dan? You and I may have even spoken about it, about the indictments of a number of Russians and Russian entities over cyber operations, including meddling in the elections, as well as doing things against our infrastructure. So it seems to be just piling on, and I don't think Russia seems to be getting the message about this, and this is meant to punish as well as, I think, deter further actions like this.
Well, you know, you were talking, Peter, about the nerve agent that was used against these two former Russian spies. Do you think there was a message from the Russians to the rest of the world, given the fact that they used this particular nerve agent?
Well, I think it was probably a message to former Russian agents. As I recall, Dan, that Sergei Skripal was a double agent, but it was his daughter who was also caught up in this. She was also poisoned. I don't believe she was involved in espionage. It was done on foreign soil. But, yeah, sure, it's done to anybody to say if you're going to be disloyal to Russia, Soviet Union, to the intelligence service, you're gonna pay a price. And I think that was the same thing that was true with Litvinenko. And I think there are some other cases out there now, as I think about it, where people suspect that the Russians may have been involved, but they can't really point a finger at them. But, yeah, I think, Putin feels very strongly about this. The Russians felt very strong. The Soviets felt very strongly about this during the Cold War. They often executed people who worked against them, Russians who worked against them. So, yeah, but it definitely is a very strong signal to folks who may have been involved in that sort of business in a previous time, but it's still considered to be a problem in the eyes of the Kremlin.
And one of the things that I find interesting, Peter, is the fact that apparently, according to, I think this might be CNN, apparently we have more than 100 Russian intelligence officers in the United States. Any reason why we wouldn't just expel all of them as opposed to leaving, roughly 40 here, but getting rid of 60?
Well, I mean, in fact, in some of the reports I've seen that some of these are diplomats, not just intelligence officers. I don't know the numbers. I don't know the numbers, Dan, so it's hard for us to speculate, right? If it is 100, that's something that, we could base that off of, but we don't really know the numbers, so it's hard for us to decide. But I some of the other reports are saying some of these were intelligence officers working as diplomats, and some of them are actual diplomats. Either way, I think the Russians get the message. Also, we closed their San Francisco, their Seattle consulate.
Yeah,
we've closed previously their San Francisco consulate. So this is a strong message to Moscow that their bad behavior is not going to be accepted.
Yeah, one of the reasons apparently they closed the Seattle consulate is because of its proximity to some sort of one of our military installations. One of the other things that I find interesting is the fact that you still have a lot of folks that are saying, President Trump is trying to cozy up to Vladimir Putin. He congratulated him on this particular phone call regarding the Russian election. What were your thoughts? I don't think you and I ever actually spoke about this. What were your thoughts on the fact that the president supposedly, allegedly congratulated Vladimir Putin on this phone call, which actually is not allegedly. The president did congratulate Putin on the phone call.
Well, look, I think with the president's explanation, it speaks for itself. I don't know if he did or not, but he said that, Russia's an important country and somebody we need to work with. I think if we can have good relations with Russia, that's good. I mean, I even supported the Obama administration's reset policy until they started giving everything away.
Yeah,
that was my concern. It wasn't that we should have good relations with major powers that we may not agree with, because they have a lot of influence over our interests. It's a question about how you go about it. So the president was right. He says, yeah, we got issues. There's issues out there over Ukraine. There's a war going on there. They took Crimea. There's Syria. there's North Korea. There's a lot of things out there. And if you can have good relationship with a country or a person, you're most better likely to get things done with them. But I, you know, in the same sense, you know, you've seen what the administration has done recently. And they've sent very strong signals towards Russia about its behavior.
Yeah, and one of the things that came out over the weekend, although, Peter, I swear you and I may have spoken about this, a headline from The Hill, Russian attacks on energy grid spark alarm. And they talk about how, I don't know if these are new revelations or not, but they talk about these Russian cyber attacks on the U.S. energy grid sparking new fears in Washington about the growing threat to the energy sector. And they talk about the power grids and everything else.
Yep.
I don't know. I why do I feel like we've had this conversation before? I know I've spoken about this many times in the 4 years I've been here at WTN.
And it's the Chinese, too.
Yes.
It's not just the Russians. It may have been, you know, we've talked about, you know, they've mapped the electric grids in the United States, but it's other infrastructure as well. They talked about nuclear power. They talked about aviation. I think even water supplies. I mean, you know, this is what's being told to us publicly. We don't know what they know privately, but it could have been new efforts on the part of the Russians to get ready to do something, attempts that were thwarted. There's a lot of things possible here. But when you look at the critical infrastructure, I mean, that can have an effect on a lot of people without any dropping any bombs or moving any soldiers, just a couple of keystrokes, and you can put a lot of people's lives in danger. And, of course, if there's a crisis, the Russians might try to do this. We've seen them do it elsewhere overseas, you know, in cyber attacks in other countries. That can have significant effects, just like a military operation. So I think that's also a warning to the Russians about it. But, yeah, that's not new. That sort of, you know, these cyber operations have been going on for a long time. It doesn't just include the Russians, it's the Chinese, the Iranians, the North Koreans. I mean, many, many countries are involved in cyber operations for espionage purposes, potential warfare purposes. It's something, it's kind of the cutting edge and something we really need to pay a lot of attention to.
And Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation and, of course, the Boston Herald, as always, appreciate your analysis and you have a great afternoon. 143 on WTN. Yeah, talking about these Russian attacks on our energy grid, I read that story and getting all these news alerts and, you know, a headline on the Drudge Report. And I'm sitting here thinking, how is this new? We've been talking about this for a long time. Revelations about Russian cyber attacks is freaking people out. The developments have some officials worried that Moscow or another nation could execute a disruptive cyber attack targeting the U.S. power grid. Now, when we talk, this is from The Hill. But whether we're talking about the Russians, as Peter said, the Russians, you've got the Chinese, you've got North Korea. It wouldn't surprise me if they're all working together, to be perfectly honest with you. You can also talk about a number of different threats that we have against our power grid. Now, the big question is, what have we done here in America over the 8 years of Obama to protect ourselves? And I would be willing to say not a whole heck of a lot. Because whether it's the Russians, whether it's the North Koreans, whether it is the Chinese, who knows? We have absolutely left our power grid. I mean, I've done an upteen number of interviews on this. I don't have to explain this to you. You know this. If you listen to Phil, you listen to me, you listen to other hosts here on the station, you know, we all talk about this, about how the fact that we have absolutely left our energy grid and some of our nuclear facilities as well, vulnerable. And we've done it time and time again. So again, whether it is the Russian ISIS, I mean, I could go Al-Qaeda. We could go on down the line. So it doesn't matter who the enemy is. The truth of the matter is that we have left ourselves vulnerable, and that's a big problem. And here's the issue. We have known about this for how long now? I mean, the AP has been documenting this for years, folks. And we have known about this since the 1970s. If I remember right, there was a whole commission that was done on this, and they provided an entire report on how our energy sector and our power grids, they were left vulnerable. You know, some of these power grids are locally run, locally owned, and some of the power grids are being dealt with and managed by the federal government. And so it just seems like we have absolutely no real way to keep ourselves safe. Now, here's a quote you've got to be worried about. And again, this is in The Hill. Quote, the next December 7th, won't be airplanes and torpedoes coming at Pearl Harbor. It's going to be triggered with an attack on our energy grid with rolling blackouts and chaos. That is a Republican out of Nebraska. His name is Don Bacon. And he is also a member of the Homeland Security Committee. And he said that this week. I mean, listen, I could have pulled that quote from 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, imagine if you're just starting to listen to WTN and you don't exactly know what would happen if the Russians were able to take out our energy grid. Here's basically what would happen. You would lose, you know, God help us, our phones and all the lights, power, buildings, without power, you name it. If it takes energy, it's not going to work. And this has been a threat for a long time. Now, we talked about this a bit even last week. Officials with the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI revealed that Russian hackers had staged cyber attacks against the energy sector and other critical infrastructures since 2016. They linked a coordinated hacking campaign the security community had been tracking for months to the Russian government, to Vladimir Putin. So this is what Putin has been doing, and Putin has been doing this for a long time. Officials issued a public alert describing how hackers you know, the other thing about this is, I'm just kind of reading through all this stuff. One of the things that I didn't have time to ask Peter about this, but what is it that we are doing wrong where Russia's not scared about what we would do in return, what we would do in retaliation? What is it they say? The best defense is a good offense. So why is it that no one seems to be worried about what we're going to do? I mean, if Vladimir Putin and some of these other nations, again, North Korea, you name it, why is it they're not worried about what we could do to their power grid? You know, sometimes I wonder, okay, so what are we doing to send them little signals? You know, can't we, oh, I don't know, man, this is the United frickin' States of America. Why don't we kill their power grid for like an hour and then we'll bring it back? I know, it sounds really simplistic, but you know what I'm saying. So they talked about these cyber attacks last week against the energy sector and, as they say, other critical infrastructure since 2016. They linked a coordinated hacking campaign with the Washington, the Washington. See, that's actually kind of funny. The Washington, yeah, the Russian government. Yeah. That is kind of odd a little bit. Officials issued a public alert describing how hackers penetrated commercial entities on the fringes of the energy sector. It's almost like what the Russians are doing is they are dropping little hints. We're here. We know how to get to your power grid. Just use your imagination as to what we can do. And so then, and I don't want to read this whole thing to you, but what I would say is people always wonder then, well, why is President Trump trying to cozy on up to Vladimir Putin? Well, you know why? It's because the president realizes what the Russians can do to us. And so with each and every sanction, with each and every expulsion of these Russian either diplomats or intelligence officers, however you want to describe these folks, every time the president does that and every time the president is tough on Vladimir Putin, you can talk about hacking as well, then that is yet another situation, yet another issue that is preventing President Trump from trying to keep our enemies closer. And that's what I think the president is trying to do, is he's trying to keep our enemies closer. That would be, of course, Vladimir Putin. That is just smart, folks. I mean, listen, I'm a Nimrod, and I understand that you really need to keep our enemies closer. But the more that Vladimir Putin makes it hard for the president to do that, the more that our president has got to push back. But make no mistake about this. The seeds of whatever, you know, future power grid attack we have, those seeds have been planted a long time ago, long before President Trump took office. So this is something that the United States has been ignoring for a long time. So what's next in our relationship with Russia? Well, it seems to me like this is not going to get better anytime soon. It's actually going to get worse. We know that there's a lot of things that the Russians could help us with. The war on terror, for example. Oh, by the way, coming up next, wait till you hear this story. It's sadly a religion of peace, quote unquote, a religion of peace update. And that story is coming up next here on Super Talk 99.7 WT.
I'm Pamela Furr. A standoff in Smyrna is over, and the U.S. telling some 80 Russians to get out. These stories and more are coming up at 2 o'clock on WTN.
Get!
Go on now!
Don't let the door hit your you-know-what on the way out.
Yep.
Hey, Pamela, hey. You're going to be there tomorrow night, right?
I am. I'm going to be a little late.
That's all right. March 27th, which would be, of course, tomorrow, Tuesday, 6 to 8 o'clock at the Wings and Rings. I knew I'd screw that up. Wings and Rings in Cool Springs. Myself, also Michael Del Giorno, Pamela Furr, Phil Valentine, Belle's going to be there.
What?
And yeah, Belle's going to be there too. Doogie's going to be there. Everybody's going to be there.
Hair up or hair down?
Belle, you going to play the closing theme anytime soon, or is that just something that you're decided not to do at this point in time?
Wow, good grief!
Thought I'd go ahead and just call Belle out right there and right there now. Listen.
So you talk to him so he's distracted.
There it is. That's too loud, of course.
That's on purpose.
Is that what it is? It's just passive aggressive board ops.
That
producers.
Was.
It's all good and well. Anyway, tomorrow night, love to see
you. You know, it's
folks.
Well and good, by the way. It drives me crazy every time you do that.
What do I say?
Good and well.
Good and well. I always say well and good. I don't say good and well.
You say good and well every time.
Do I?
Yes, and it drives me crazy.
Delicious and moist.
That and let's, can I? Since we're calling you out.
No, because I've only got seven. Yes,
what is
go ahead,
under
call
the,
me out in 5 seconds.
Every name under the book. What does that mean? You said every name under the. You call us every name under the book. It's
cut
under
her,
the sun.
Cut her mic off.
Under the
just
sun.
Done with it. Cut her off. Stop it.